Welcome to Comedians Talking Baseball, our weekly MLB recap podcast, where myself, comedian Joe Kilgallen, and comedian Mike Bryanstein break down what's going on in the world of baseball, get into the history of the game, and just have ourselves a good old time. Brado, how you doing?
Good, just two alt comedians talking baseball.
Fuck, kids. Before we started the podcast, Mike and I, for some reason, started talking about comedy and what's considered alt comedy and not alt comedy, and I don't know. It's just a weird term that only enters the community of artists, I guess. I don't even know what the fuck I'm trying to say. Sorry, everybody. This podcast is a day late, and that shit's on me. Schedule got a little messed up yesterday, and we didn't have time to record.
One of your best posts, Joe, you said, that aren't there genres of comedy? And do I have to like everything? Like, does somebody who likes metal know the new country album? That was a smart post, and I thought about that. And yes, and somebody should do it, even though comedians will fight against it, but it's more relevant now than
Thank
ever.
You for that post. Yeah, those of you who don't follow me on Twitter, I'm at Joe Kilgallen. Brido's at Brido. I had a post, basically, and it made me think of the whole, all right, we're going to get in a little comedy inside real quick, but we got a lot of fun baseball. There is a Netflix special called Minette by a comedian named Hannah Gatsby, who I believe is from New Zealand. And someone asked me if I had watched it, and I said, no, I have not. And then someone asked me if I'd watched Drew Michael's HBO special, Drew Michael, and I also said, no, I have not. And then they kind of gave me a look like, oh, well, those are the two big specials everyone's talking about. And I go, yeah, but I know what I like, and I'm not going to – and then I saw all these comedians hating on Nanette and some hating on Drew's, and I go, look, they're not for everybody. There's some – I don't expect the people who – can't wait for Maria Bamford's next special to go nuts for Joe Rogan's next special. You know, it's stupid that as comedians, we feel the need to throw in our two cents and everything, because I really do believe, like music, comedy has its own subgenres where, you know, it's different styles. They don't all have labels like music. You know what I mean? I don't know what's considered the R&B of comedy or, you know. So, but I definitely don't, I don't get why as comedians we freak out about it. I don't, like I said, I don't think the latest, you know, who's ever big in heavy metal, I don't think they care about the next Dierks Bentley album or something.
Right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for appreciating that tweet, Brido. We got 2 weeks left, everybody, of the regular season. Two exciting weeks, because there are some tight-ass races, mostly in the National League. The AL East is sewn up. Those wild cards are sewn up. The Cleveland Indians have already clinched, and no one from the AL Central is even sniffing around a playoff spot. And I guess maybe by a miracle, Oakland could perhaps, but unlikely. It's pretty much set in the American League. The National League, on the other hand, though, things are sexy. Besides the Braves, who now have a 6.5 game lead over Philly, we have a two and a half game lead for the Cubs in the NL Central. Then you have the Dodgers, who have a half game lead over the Colorado Rockies. Diamondbacks are 5 games out, so it's looking very unlikely for them. And the wild cards are very tight, too, because you have the Dodgers, Cardinals, and Rockies all right there. Brewers with a couple-game lead for that first wild card spot for home field for the wild card. So it is getting exciting, everybody.
Yeah, since we last spoke, Red Sox are also in.
Yes, the Red Sox and Indians are the first two teams to clinch.
I don't even look at games back anymore, to be honest with you. I look at the magic numbers.
The magic numbers are fun. But I think the average person doesn't understand them, because I've heard people say, like, how did we get into the magic number when we lost?
Want me to do
go
it
Go for
quick?
Yes.
163, that's the number of games, plus one. So 163 minus the team in first place wins minus the next team's losses. The Cubs' magic number, everybody, is 10. Over the Brewers.
So that means if the Cubs win 5 of their next 10, which let's hope they do a lot better than that, and the Brewers lose 5 of the next 10, it's over,
baby.
It's
over.
So it's a combination of Cubs wins and the next team's losses, which in that case, it's the Milwaukee Brewers. So there you
Correct.
Go.
Correct. So Red Sox magic number is 2. Astros magic number is 9 over the A's, 2 over the Mariners, so forth and so on. So, like, the Nationals, are they still in it? Magic number is 5. Their elimination number is 5. I guess their elimination number, not their magic number.
Yes, the E number.
Yes. And that is mostly on MLB's standings and not on anyone else. So games back, doesn't really help. You know how people say you got to look at the loss column. That's why.
Yes. Yeah. The key, yeah, because you can't make up losses. That's why the loss column is so big. I don't think the average person even realizes that when they look at stuff like this. They think, ooh, 2.5 back. But if you really look at the loss column, the Cubs, for example, have 3 less losses. So you can't make those up.
Or fewer, depending on how your grammar is.
Yes, 3 fewer would be correct English. Thank you for that. I'm going to be a little off on the podcast today. I could feel it. I'm going to do my best for everybody. I'm going to try to be entertaining and insightful and all those good things. But I know as far as speech goes, I'm definitely going to mess up some words. I've been doing that all day. You ever had that where you're typing to someone and you miss an entire word?
Yeah.
That is a sign of your brain going too fast. What's more embarrassing, misspelling a word or missing a word that makes the sentence feel weird?
Well, it's because we are in a baseball texting group, and one of our brethren has a young daughter, and he is just stressed out as fuck about his daughter. And I have to go in there with, like, the Rosetta Stone to figure out what he's saying on his text sometimes.
There are some... there are some of his texts that really do crack me up, and there's a few that really just, you could tell he just needs some contact with adults.
Because... yeah, he's, oh, I don't know what you're saying. I get the gist of it, and yeah. So, for all of you who have young children, you're appreciated, you're a good parent, you're a bad texter.
The worst, man. I mean, it's funny though. I've been like that though too. I think my bad texting is missing words, or his will be something where, hey, what happened on that play? I missed it, and I want to be like,
you're at the game.
Yes. Also, that was embarrassing because he was at the game. And another time, I'm like, dude, you clearly have internet, okay? Because you shared a link 5 minutes ago to some article about the president or whatever's going on in politics. Yeah. So just why don't you look it up? Because all of us are busy too.
He wrote yesterday, and I love him.
I love him too.
We're ripping on a person that we love. But yesterday I was referring to a writer that I like reading, and he wrote that he's such a great writer. It's head and then SONNGJ.
I didn't get that one, and I just tapped out. I didn't even try to investigate what it meant.
It's head scratching? It's head soongjj.
I thought it was like an Asian writer, and I thought maybe that was the last name.
Well, yeah, I don't know what's going on with his texting, but I know he will blame his daughter.
For sure. Hey, before we break down some of the races left, including the awards races like we like to do, Mets third baseman David Wright will play his final game next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend. He'll suit up for a final time, and he is calling it a career. He will be retiring from the game of baseball, and David Wright really just – a career a solid career, don't get me wrong, but one of those careers where you're like, damn, you know, if he didn't get injured those last 4 or 5 years, it could have been a different story, because he had some monster seasons early on in his career and was a guy that Major League Baseball really was trying to make the face of their game there for a little bit. Good-looking guy, played third base, played in New York City.
Looked like Frankie Munoz from Malcolm in the Middle.
I don't see that as much, maybe a little bit, but he's 35. He'll be calling it just too many injuries. His body just, he said, couldn't. He hadn't played a full season since 2014, where he played 134 games. But even 2013, 112, 156 in 156, then 102 in 2011. But back when he was doing full seasons, man, I'm looking at his 2007 season, which he must have been like 24. Let's see, if he's 35 now, that was 11 years ago. He's 24. So as a 24-year-old, he played 160 games. Guess what his war was?
Oh, shit. 7.
This is hard. 2008, he was 7 even, but he had an 8.4 in 2007. He had a great season. He had a 325 average, 416 on base, slug 546. OPS, or his WRC plus was 151. Great base runner. Stole 34 bases, hit 30 home runs. He was a 30-30 guy then. Yeah, man, he was a stud.
I saw a headline that was a picture of him Johan Santana and Nomar Garciaparra, and it was kind of about guys who were well on their way to Cooperstown careers who injuries just sidetracked. And you could probably put like Don Mattingly in that category, a few other guys who were well on their way and just, you know, injuries.
It's depressing when you think about it. I mean, but at least they were there. So like as a regular person, I can't feel too sad for David Wright and Don Mattingly and guys like that. But as a fan, you know, it's like, damn, you know, you hate to see someone get sidetracked because of just physical stuff.
When I was in Chicago and my roommate owed me so much money in utilities, he got tickets, really good tickets, to Nomar's first game with the Cubs, which was also Greg Maddux going for win 300. And I waived all of his utility fees so I could go to that game.
Great deal. That's a great score right there. Like, I'm looking at I told you guys I was going to be bad today. I almost said Bon Mattingly. I don't know why. I'm looking at Don Mattingly's numbers. And, yeah, he had some fantastic numbers early on in his career. We're talking a couple batting titles, good on the WAR stat. Base runner always a little below average. Defensively below average. A little surprising.
First baseman that don't – they know that that's not perfect.
Yeah, there's some stuff that I really don't think – you know, that's why I'm glad catcher you and I –
catcher WAR is weird and first baseman WAR is weird. They actually think that Baseball Prospectus might have a better WAR for catchers. So some people just strictly use that, but it's not available to the general public because you have to pay a subscription. So fuck them.
Yeah, fuck that noise. Come on, man. How about the baseball community there, Prospectus?
Yeah.
Can prospect these nuts with that kind of shit. All right. I don't understand, though. That's why I like that we're digging into it, though, because there are some people who are blindly accepting these new numbers, which I think goes against sabermetrics. I think sabermetrics is supposed to be about questioning shit.
Yeah.
That's how they came up with these new stats and metrics for all sorts of stuff like that. Things have shifted in the NL MVP race. I mean, I feel like the last time we talked, we were talking Matt Carpenter.
Right now, you got to say Yelich.
I mean, I don't have to. I'll say whatever I feel like it. But you're right. Yelich has been fantastic these last 2 weeks, and it's really jumped him up. He is now the WAR leader in the National League. He is a fantastic player. I'm not taking anything away from him. Gun to my head, I still think Javier Baez is the right decision.
Sure. Last week, it drove me crazy that I said Matt Carpenter instead of Paul Goldschmidt. I would have said Paul Goldschmidt last week, but now I'm saying Christian Yelich.
So Christian Yelich, offensively, it's just the one stat that he clearly is better than Baez to me is just his on-base percentage. I mean, obviously his batting average is a little bit higher there too, but he's got a 385 on-base percentage where Javi only gets 330.
Lead the league in batting average?
Yeah, 318 he does. But I mean, Baez is at 294, so like it's not like, oh shit, what a difference those two are.
Yeah, it's
Baez, the problem is Baez had a bad like full – Baez like a 10-game stretch that wasn't good. At the same time that every player on the Cubs had a 10-game stretch that wasn't good.
I know. I just got to keep you honest. Just got to be devil's advocate.
No, I like you being devil's advocate with me. I just think with who's two? Okay, if you go by the WAR stat, this is how I view it. Christian Yelich is number one for the National League. Do you know who number two is?
I think it's Lorenzo Cain.
It's Lorenzo Cain, his teammate. So to me, that almost kind of like – I mean, am I punishing Yelich because his teammate's also awesome? But doesn't that also say something where it's like, yeah, okay, you have two guys, like a lineup configuration will help certain players.
Yeah.
So is Yelich hits behind Cain. So Cain's number or Cain might have a false, you know, he might be propped
up.
Are you
going to punish Mookie for having JD Martinez in the lineup?
I mean, I'm not punishing either of them. I'm saying that it has to be considered. Who's hit behind Javi Baez this year?
Right.
Nobody. Baez has hit up behind every. Baez has been batted fourth, fifth, sixth. Even when he was batting first and second for a while, it's not like he was getting the best production behind him.
How crazy is that? The Cubs have the best record in the National League. They have one player in a conversation for any award. Do you know what I'm saying? So they don't have any they don't have anybody who's a starting pitcher who you could really make an argument for Cy Young.
No, they don't. I mean, no.
They only have one MVP candidate, whereas, like, the Red Sox have two, the Indians have two, you know, the A's have one, I guess, like, Angels have one, but not that they're good. But if you look at the AL Cy Young, like, if you were to say, like, okay, who's in the running for Cy Young? Chris Sale. Three, four guys on the Indians, two guys on the Astros. You know what I mean? Like, the good teams are stacked with good players.
They are. They're like super teams. They're pretty top heavy.
The Cubs are just all kind of good.
This is what Theo Epstein got a little, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, fresh maybe? He got a little arrogant, but in a fun way, in a very Theo way. He was talking to someone, I think, with MLB.com, or someone was interviewing him about something. And he said, our bullpen gets very overlooked. And it's I know people are thinking, oh, well, we're not one of those teams that has the best bullpen ERA in baseball. Oh, wait, we are that team by, like, this much, too. Like, he got real, like, I think he was kind of pissed off that people kind of been slacking on the bullpen a little bit these last few weeks because, you know, Pedro Strop got injured. And can we talk about that? I know we talk a lot about Cubs because we're both Cubs fans, but the Cubs right now are an interesting story because they were in the middle. It ends on Thursday, but 30 games scheduled in 30 days.
Horrible.
Horrible.
Rizzo's wearing his fucking uniform on the plane because, like he said, if it's going to be this big of a joke, I'm going to keep it a joke.
Yeah, which I liked. It was a way to lighten the mood a little bit, and they actually won that game. I mean, their offense has suffered because of it. The bullpen hasn't been quite as sharp, but has still been very good. The starting pitching, which was the biggest question mark about the Cubs the first 3.5 months of the season, has been stellar.
Yeah.
Stellar. I no longer have, like, anxiety over starts by Cubs pitchers. Cole Hamels, I mean, we traded for him, and we're, you know, I was trying to be optimistic, but again, I like you playing devil's advocate because it makes for good conversation. He was the pitcher of the month in the month of August in the National League.
He sure was.
Yeah, and he hasn't really slowed down at all either. He's still been pitching very strong for the Cubs, like pitching good 6-7 innings almost every start, giving up no more than 2 earned runs, I don't think, in any of his last 6 or 7 starts. And only once has he given up more than 2. I think he had one start where he gave up 3 earned. But other than that, everything's been beneath that. And Lester's looked really sharp. Kyle Hendricks has been unbelievable really since – beginning of July, he's been pitching like an ace.
I feel like
yesterday he goes into the ninth, striking out a lot of guys, giving a very weak contact.
I feel like Quintana's been pitching well.
Quintana's been pitching very well. The Cubs now have, as far as ERA goes, if you look at that stat, 3 guys in the top 20.
Look at team stats.
You can't count Cole Hamels.
I think that they're number 5 in baseball.
That sounds about right.
For like a staff, like the Dodgers are up there, obviously the Astros and Indians, but like the don't sleep on. I mean, okay, I was gonna say don't sleep on the Cubs pitching, but a bullpen. If you're not, people don't look at a bullpen and say we're dominant that often. I think what you want is for people to not notice the bullpen at all. When they notice a bullpen is when they suck.
Yeah, exactly. Like with umpires.
Yes.
I could only name bad umpires. I could name Joe West, right. Angel Hernandez, C.B. Buckner.
Yeah.
But, that, you know, there's 100 umpires, but I can only name like 4 or 5. That tells you something.
Who's the first umpire that popped in my head? Probably the guy who blew the perfect game for that guy. God damn it. I can't think of his name. But, yeah, he made a mistake. Or, like, famous umpires are ones that made famous mistakes.
Yes, bad. There's been a lot of bad umpires lately. That what's his name? Something Diaz. He almost ejected Bryce Harper while Bryce Harper was playing center field.
Like, you want to be the greatest umpire of all time? Have nobody ever think about your name.
Yes. Shut up. You're getting paid 6 figures to call a game. And a lot of these guys are getting, there's something, I don't know if they think they're getting disrespected more, but it used to be back in the day, if you didn't like a call and you're like, that was bullshit and you're swearing, as long as you're not showing up the ump. If you're getting the umpire's face, of course you're gonna get tossed. But if you're just mumbling and walking away, going, what a bunch of fucking bullshit, don't you call that shit both ways, blah, blah, blah. The ump doesn't care. The ump will look forward. But I'll never forget this. I remember one time it was when Chris Bryant got ejected. He kind of said something and was walking away, and then he got tossed. And it was shocking because Chris Bryant's known as like the most mild-mannered person you'll ever come across. I think he's straight edge. I don't think he drinks or anything like that. He's just a very respectful, cool, chill dude. And for him to be like, that's a bullshit call. Well, it was a bullshit call. I remember the call being like the ball's like a foot inside. And the ump kind of like followed, like, what are you saying? What are you saying? And that's where Madden's like, whoa, you don't do that. You don't get behind your little box there and chase players down to hear what they had to say. They could call you a cocksucker as long as it's not to your face. Now, nobody pays to see you fucking ump, you jerk off. I mean, this is me ad-libbing what he should have said.
I like when somebody got tossed for saying that, I don't remember who it was, but they said something like, should have robot umps, and they fucking tossed him, which I thought was the greatest.
Zobrist, thing. Ben Zobrist.
Was it Zobrist? I thought it was Zobrist.
Who was also a very sweet Christian man, you know what I mean?
He loves his wife.
He sure does. We make fun of her sometimes because of her singing, but I don't think she's got that bad a voice. Does she?
I don't know. She's got a, I don't like her hair color. I can be honest about that.
We just make fun of her because she's a Christian singer. She's in Christian pop.
Yeah.
And, me, which, you know what though? When you were doing your alt definition, you say people who punch up. I think making fun of Christian music and Christians right now is not punching up. Christians are the dominant, but when you do something that everyone else does, that's not punching at all. That's unoriginal and boring.
Well,
Twitter has ruined so much of comedy for me. I think Twitter is my least favorite of all the social medias now, because you know what I want to do? I want to go back through a tweet that went viral from someone, say 10 months ago, and basically copy and paste it as my own, and it'll probably go viral again. I retweeted with comment where you could tweet the tweet and then, you know, you give your take on it. And someone was like, comedy isn't too PC. You just need to be a better joke writer. And it, you know, had 4,000 retweets and all this shit, more than that. And I was like, I mean, he said people who are against it are just hacks. And I go, yeah, but this tweet's pretty hack. I've seen this pop up every 3 months from different people the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people liked it, but then someone's like, hey, this is my friend. Don't be a dick to them. And I'm like, listen, it's nothing personal, but this tweet is unoriginal and bland, and it's bullshit. It's not bullshit. I actually agree. I said, I agree with your tweet, but it's a bad tweet because it's not original. And every day I go on Twitter and I see more and more unoriginal takes that get so much love, because Twitter is a news feed. And I admit it. When I go on Twitter, sometimes I just want to get some news. I want to hear what's going on, because that's what you go there for. I think Instagram you go to for fun, and Facebook you go to for what reason you don't even know anymore. But Twitter, you just want, right? Twitter, you just want real quick. What's like, I want to find out about injuries from a player. I want to find out what's going on about like little things here or there.
Facebook,
and it's people doing their own spin.
I think Facebook is like to share like life milestones.
I actually love Facebook now because for some reason I did a good job where I got my Facebook feed down to nothing but animal videos. It's just dogs and cats kissing each other, and it's great, and I love it.
I think
where Twitter, I'll mute people I'm friends with, but I don't like their tweets. You know, you got friends with people where you're like, I can't unfollow them because we're friends, but I hate their presence on Twitter. And I might be that way for some people. Some people might be like, they hate sports, but they follow me because we're friends. They might like my comedy, but they're like, I can't deal with him tweeting about the Bears and Cubs, so I'm gonna. Which I get it. That's fine. But I try to do that with enough people where I'd stop seeing stupid ass shit, but no, I keep seeing it. I saw one thing where this woman went on, by the way, see this thread. Don't click on see this thread, people. It's never good. It's always just more, oh, you see that first point I made? Here's 10 others along the same lines, but I'm too lazy to write a blog. And this is the new thing on Twitter.
Didn't you anyway, have, like life hack?
It's always life hack shit. You know, I mean, some of those are useful actually though, but.
No, but you said life. Here's a life hack. Don't ever click on see this thread.
Yes, I did do that as a life hack. You're right.
I think it shows me. I think my algorithm shows me your tweets because I usually like what you tweet.
I see yours a lot too, and I like what you tweet. You had a funny ass one. Fuck, what was it about that dude that nobody likes? Miller? Was it Miller?
Oh, Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller. Yeah, that was funny as hell. But no, this woman tweeted something that said unwanted pregnancies are always men's fault, And I was just like, wait, what? Hold on, what? And then I clicked on it, and I get what she's saying with the whole, you know, we could pull out, we could wear the condom, but men always will try to guilt women and going, oh, it feels better without the condom. And then there are some men who don't want to pull out because it feels better not to pull out. And I go, yeah, but like, it's still not 100%. How can you say pregnancy is ever 100% one gender?
I don't know.
And I was just like, fuck, God, this is so annoying. And I don't follow this woman, but so many people who suck that I do follow thought that was a good thing. And they tweeted it. And you know why they thought it was a good thing, Mike?
Because it was anti-. Because
she was punching up at white men.
Yeah.
I'm joking, obviously. But it'd be really funny if, like, seven tweets down it said, oh, this is specifically white men, by the way. All the other men are cool. If you're a white man, fuck you. All the other men, they never do this shit. But it's white, you know.
I just think it's.
I don't know, man. I'm just tired. And I'm fucking venting about everything.
You know who never rips on white men?
Who?
My black wife.
Yeah, because your wife's not a hack. I'm serious with that. The only people who rip on white men in comedy are white men or white women.
She hates it when people do it. And yesterday she even said, like, why are you ripping on white people and not the institutions that allow for whatever white privilege? And I was just like, I'm with you.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I don't want people thinking that anytime I see something that's anti-white dudes, it upsets me, because it doesn't. You just have to be funny about it, though. I saw a tweet the other day that said, like, straight people be missing high school, like, something. And it made me laugh, because just the way it was funny. Because, you know, gay people clearly don't miss high school. I mean, some gay people might, but there's the idea that, you know, only straight people would miss high school because it was awesome that for them. I don't know. It was a funny tweet. I can't remember exactly how it was worded.
That is,
but it made me laugh.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't care. You can make fun of redheaded dudes with blue eyes all fucking day, but it has to be funny. I don't care what you do. It's just that's what my only take on this kind
that
of stuff.
That was my thing with Hannah Gadsby, not to be confused with Hannah Gansen. Her Nanette special, I agree with her politics, but I didn't think it was funny.
And that's fair. And I'm okay with people who are saying, like, yeah, it was thought-provoking. I actually enjoyed it. I didn't laugh at all. So maybe it shouldn't be stand-up comedy. Maybe it should be just a one-woman show. I should say. Damn it.
At the end of it, she makes you – it really is painful to hear her talk about her shit. And, like, she's evoking, like, tears from the crowd. So that part's not even supposed to be funny. I think that's the part that's, like, shocking and, like, meaningful to people. Because it is, like – comedy or not, she gives one hell of a fucking speech, right? But
sure, it's a TED talk.
Her jokes at the beginning aren't my cup of tea.
And guess what, Mike? That's okay.
Which, if you've seen that special, is a brilliant play of words there. But she gives jokes about, like, she has jokes about how the potatoes in Tasmania. Do you really think that's funny, everybody who loves it? The potatoes in Tasmania jokes. Shut up. You just like your politics.
Yeah. I just wish that more people with whatever they liked or didn't like had the guts to be like, you know, I didn't think this was very good.
Somebody say Wonder Woman is not a good movie.
I never saw Wonder Woman, but you know what I mean? It's like, I have a couple of female comedian friends in Chicago who I remember when Nanette came up in conversation, I go, oh, how was that? And they go, it sucked. And I know I'm not supposed to say that. And I go, what do you mean you're not supposed to say that? I didn't understand that. I was like, you didn't like something. And someone asked your opinion, say you don't like it. And they're like, yeah, but if I say I don't like it, people are going to think I'm not, you know, this and this and this. I'm not being supportive, or I'm looking at it in a different way or whatever. I'm like, God, that's exhausting. Isn't it exhausting that you can't just say your opinion on something?
Yeah, because it's like a show what team you're on type of situation.
Which is weird. Why can't I be on that team, but then also think that this thing sucks?
Exactly.
That's driving me nuts.
That's how it is now. She gives a political opinion that talks about straight white men and their privilege. And if you don't like it, you must not like it because of her politics. And then,
yeah, it's boring, man. Hey, I got a bad news though, man. And everybody, we'll come back to this. My son is crying his head off and has been for like the last 10 minutes. I'm at home. My wife's at work. So I kind of do have to go check on him. So, Mike, I'm committed to try to calm him down, chill him out, and then call you back and finish the rest of the podcast, in which we will talk more about what we think is going to happen these next 2 weeks. And really not so much that what we think is going to happen, but what we want to see happen. Like, Brado, I'd love to hear out of you. Second wild card, who would you rather have it be, Dodgers or Cardinals? Like, fun stuff like that. Save the I know you want to answer right away because you're like Jones, but save the opinion. I'm gonna go check on the little one, see if I can get him back to sleep. If not, I will call you back and we'll figure this out. That way it's more than just a 25-minute podcast.
All right,
thanks, Matt. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thank you for checking out Comedians Talking Baseball. As you all heard, I had to deal with some dad stuff, but Brido and I are recording again, so you're going to have a complete episode, and we apologize for coming out a little bit late. And but we're excited because we got 2 weeks left of the season coming up, my friend. A lot of interesting races in the awards sense, too. I was reading up on the Cy Young and the AL because I was on Fangraphs, our beloved Fangraphs, a site we're both big fans of. And I noticed that Chris Sale was not on the leaderboard.
Not on the
leaderboard. And it's because he no longer qualifies.
What?
Maybe I was reading it wrong. Help me out with this one because I don't have Fangraphs in front of me, Brido. But I swear when I was looking at it this morning, and my computer just died, everyone, because we're so fucking professional on this podcast. So I'm useless now. You're going to have to reference every stat.
What do you want Joe to do? Produce it and host it, you animals? Oh, Sale fell off.
See, Chris Sale's not on the leaderboard for WAR. So how do we vote for him for Cy Young when he doesn't have enough innings to qualify?
Let's go to qualified zero. Chris Sale has 150 innings. Verlander has 202 innings. I don't know, man. They try to give relief pitchers Cy Young all the fucking time. If you pitched 150 innings and you have a 6.2 WAR and no one has a better WAR than you, plus he has the best ERA and FIP, I want to say.
I would believe that because he's a strikeout leader.
You know, I haven't put a lot of thought into it, but
you got a strong case for Verlander could be made.
I am making coffee. I want you to bear with me. I want to have a good show and not make this much noise, but caffeine is good.
Oh, for sure, man. Get a little pep to the step. I also want to see Kate Upton lose her mind if he doesn't get it. Do you remember when Verlander got screwed out of the award a couple years ago and they gave it to, who got it, Porcello or someone else a couple years back?
Yeah.
And Kate Upton famously went on Twitter saying, "Hey, at MLB, I thought I was the only person that gets to fuck Justin Verlander."
Oh, my God.
She actually wrote that. And I remember being like, man, is that a turn on. Dude, ooh.
Yeah, but
imagine your wife going to bat for you like that, and she looks like Kate Upton. Whew. Not to say our wives don't look like Kate Upton, because they do. But I don't know, man. I got a little turned on by that old Katie Upton.
The only thing I would say is, hey, at Kate Upton, MLB doesn't vote for it.
That's a good point. Maybe she wrote, "Hey, at MLB writers," or maybe I'm just trying to defend her because I think she's amazing.
Well, MLB does come up with the top three, right? Or is that all votes based on, I don't know.
I think that's based off the votes. And they started doing the top three thing to get people excited about who it's going to be revealed, you know?
I figure if Kate Upton was in front of me and said that, I would be like, yeah, and not like, well, technically, Kate.
Well, because it was just a cool thing to see her, like, have her guys back like that and to be sexy in a way, you know?
Who also went off on somebody? Didn't, like, Steph Curry's wife go off?
Steph Curry's wife has his back, too. I don't know. I just kind of like it. I like, there's something sexy to me about.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm back. Some fucking asshole tried calling me during this. And, ladies and gentlemen, we record over our phone, so when a phone call pops up, it ruins things. I have this thing, dude, and this person might hear this, but I'm not naming the person, but this goes to anyone who knows me in general. Stop calling me. Please stop calling. All right? We no longer live in that society. We live in a text messaging society now. Now, Brido, I know you used to call me drunk at night, and that I love those conversations. I was happy to answer those calls, but that was years ago. You know what I mean? And I'm at a different point in my life where I don't have time to be answering phone calls. I'm raising a son. I'm raising a dog. You know, I'm trying to maintain a house, and I'm producing content. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I get phone calls from like a handful of people. Nate Craig, phone calls.
Nate Craig's a phone call guy. I talked to him on the phone like a few months back for like 20 minutes. No, look, there's some people I get it. Like, but you have, I'm not, look, by the way, and Brido, if you called me, I would not be upset. There is a select handful. If I barely know you or we know each other just enough, text me for the love of God, especially when in the conversation is something you could have easily texted. I've had stuff like this where, I'm just going to say, I don't give a shit, but this is more clues because if the person listens to this, they're going to be like, oh, I know you were talking about me. There's something I'm doing where it's the message I got said 28th, and then I got an email saying, here's the schedule for the 29th. And I'm like, I send the email back going, is it the 28th or the 29th? Because the first email's the 28th, and I'm here on the 29th, and this is a big deal for me because, you know, I've got plans that, you know, are set. So let me know so I can figure this shit out, right? And I didn't say shit. I was much more cordial. but have I gotten a response to that email? No, I have not. But I've gotten 3 phone calls. And the one phone call I couldn't take because I was at the vet, took my dog to the vet today. Couldn't answer the phone during the middle of that. And then the other call, I was putting my son down for a nap. And then I'm pretty sure this third call was during the podcast. And it's very simple to just respond to the fucking email or even text back saying, listen, it's actually the 29th. I'm terribly sorry. I did mess up and write the 28th originally. If this is a problem, please let me know immediately. We can figure this out and you know, blah, blah, blah. I mean, something, right? Anyway, sorry, listeners. This is just,
hey,
we're getting this. This is our slump we're getting out of the way before October.
In fairness, you and I do a fucking podcast where it's a phone conversation. However, when you want to do it, guess how you reach me?
I text you.
Yeah. Right.
I do. I text you to be like, hey, are you available? And you'll be like, yeah. And then I just send you that link and then we link up. It's great. But no, sorry, everybody. This is like, you know, we're 2 weeks left in the regular season. You know how you have a team like the Red Sox where you're like, look, we don't want you just winning 120 games and having it easy. Let's go through a little hiccup before the playoffs. That way you kind of get a little battle tested, you know?
Right.
You go in too hot, it's almost ruins it because, you know, there's that whole thing where if you clinch too early, you're not going to start your starters the last 10 games if you clinch with that many left. So you're kind of, you know, players are getting bored and all that. That's what we're going through right now. Because I think, Brido, you and I, we're going to definitely have some killer ones for October. We might have to do 2 a week because there'll be the playoff matchups will be so insane. I'm excited, man. Are you pumped for October?
I am. I love this time of year. I love looking at the magic numbers, as I was talking about yesterday, or same podcast. So
yeah, guys, this is one podcast over 2 days. So,
yeah, I love looking at, like, the Cubs have 11 games left. I love looking at that and kind of figuring out, like, who's where, or, like, what teams are still on the bubble. I like the wild card races. It's fun.
Yeah, I'm pumped for the wild card races. I really want to see a scenario where the Cardinals, Dodgers, and Rockies all tie. That'd be sick. There's a 3-way tie for that second wild card / second division title. Or not the division title, but the West title, I should say. I don't know why I said second division title. You know what I meant, everybody. How would that work? If the Dodgers and Rockies finish the regular season with the same record, which I'm not sure if it's possible because I know they have some head-to-head matchups coming up. But, I mean, it is possible. But say they finish both, like, you know, 91 wins or 90 wins or something.
Oh, man, I don't know.
And the Cardinals finish with the same record. So you have all 3 teams right there. Do the Dodgers and Rockies play a 1-game tiebreaker for the division? And then the loser of that faces the Cardinals for the wild card tie? And then the winner of that goes on to face the Brewers for the 1-game wild card?
Or do they
maybe
go,
it's sexy.
Or do they go head-to-head? I don't really know.
I think it would play like how I just said. I think you would have to, because I don't think they do it like head-to-head matchup. Would they? So would they? Would it be like?
Well, who gets fucked with having to play 2 play-in games?
That's true. That is true. Well, see, because it's weird. Because would they have a one? Would they play 163rd game to see who wins the division? And then the winner of the division is like, we won the division, great. And then the loser would have to play the second play-in game against the Cardinals.
And then go to the play-in in the wild card. Oh, man, that's exciting.
That would be great.
I would root for that team, though. Let's say that the Rockies lose to the Dodgers. So they're going to tie for the second wild card. They have to play the Cardinals. The Rockies beat the Cardinals. Now the Rockies are playing the Brewers. You have to root for the Rockies.
Oh, totally. It would be
or whoever that team is.
I want it to be the Rockies because it's a Rocky story at that point. It's a true underdog, you know, to have to go through that gauntlet, basically, just to get into the first round of the playoffs. Are we considering the wild card the first round?
It is the playoffs. No, that's the wild card game.
The wild card game. It's not a round. A round has to be multiple games. But I think about how it's weird to say, like, yeah, I guess it is the wild card game. But you technically make the playoffs if you are a wild card team.
Yes.
I don't know. You think the wild card game should be 2 out of 3? See, 2 out of 3, it's...
You need to stop with this. I think that you need to win your division or shut the fuck up. They added that wild card game because of the final game of the 2010 season where everybody went crazy. And I think MLB said, let's do that every year. If you don't like it, win your division. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that the Rays have the same record as the Indians. But... win your division. That's who you play the most.
I would agree. I would. I mean, we've gone back and forth on this. You think it should be to award the division. I just think I agree with you. Win the division. I like the wild card game. It's sexy. But what if we live in a world with no divisions?
Oh, you've done this to me before. And
I know. It's one of those fucked up things. Anyway, we don't need to talk about it because I want to talk about how back to the AL Cy Young talk there a little bit. Besides Verlander, besides Sale, because the argument with Verlander versus Sale is this, and I hear you with the whole innings pitch thing, because if you only pitch 150 innings, but you produce this much, then what difference does it make? There's been closers who've only pitched 75 innings and they've gotten Cy Young votes, and even won Cy Youngs. I believe Eric Gagne's won a Cy Young.
Yeah.
Dennis Eckersley won a Cy Young as a reliever. So when I hear that, and I take the value you put into that, that's a smart approach. But then isn't there value to the fact that Justin Verlander has made 7 more starts?
Absolutely.
For his team, because those 7 more starts mean they didn't have to replace him with some AAA guy and shuffle things around. And those starts that the replacement level player, you know, taxes the bullpen more. So to a team, like if I'm constructing a team, I want the guy that's going to make 32 starts and 200 innings and give me a 6 WAR versus the 6.7 WAR at 150 innings, because then I don't have to shuffle my deck as much, you know?
Yeah.
Because I look at, you know, I mean, I look at it that way, where as a manager of a baseball team or a GM, it's nice to pencil in my 5 starters and know that I don't know if they're going to be there the whole year. Never a DL trip, never whatever. They're going to keep my bullpen fresh.
Okay. Well, let's say that you're a robot and you don't understand human emotion, and you see a guy like Ronald Acuna, who's got a 4 WAR in the National League, playing like, fewer games than everybody else with a 4 WAR, right? And do you think, well, he fucked his team because they had to shuffle the deck? Or you think, no, he didn't get called up. So do you penalize Ronald Acuna for a decision that was not his own because he wasn't born at the right time to be able to be on the team already and blah, blah, blah? It's the same thing, just different.
First of all, the born at the right time threw me off there. I was following everything you meant. Is there a rule in baseball where you have to be of a certain age all of a sudden?
Yeah, if he was born 2 years earlier, he'd be in the league already.
So you think they didn't want him up at 18, they wanted him up at 19? Well, he's 18, isn't he? How old is he? Is he 18 or 19?
I think Acuna is, I don't know. You might be thinking of...
Soto's the teenager.
Soto's 19.
Too. 19. Okay. No, I hear you about Acuna. Yeah, Acuna might be 2021, actually, then.
Yeah, he was born in, like, 97.
I got you. All right. It's different with position players. But seriously, I really view it differently. It's why I had this conversation with my dad a while ago, and I think I brought it up, and I think you said you had a similar one with your dad, perhaps. Maybe this is just a dad opinion, but I actually agree with it, where he says, every now and then, like, Verlander won MVP not that long ago. Did Kershaw win MVP as well?
He did.
He did. And my dad's theory is, how can you be the most valuable player when you play once a week, essentially? You're once every five games.
Completely agree with that.
Yeah, and they have the Cy Young. The Cy Young is their award. I don't agree with them having the MVP. So when it comes to, you know, him accumulating a four war but not qualifying, Acuna, I'm not sure. Some names you just don't know how to pronounce unless you hear them out loud. And I do not watch enough Braves games to actually know how to pronounce his last name.
You know, the real motherfucker is Fultonevich.
I think you nailed it, though. I've actually heard that name. I think you nailed it.
It looks like Faulty Newitz.
It does. But with an everyday player, the value is way more evident to me. Because, you know, he didn't get called up yet. So, exactly. Like, you know, he wasn't called up yet. So, of course, he's not hurting the team. And when you're there every day, I see the value in your war a little bit more. Where a pitcher's war sometimes is strange. There have been – someone was talking about this. There was a pitcher who his war was more than his actual win total. I don't know who the fuck it was, though, which is strange. I get it. War is not exactly – with pitchers, it's weird because the win – you know, the win-loss stat, we both agree, is totally outdated.
I mean, it could have been DeGrom at some point. Isn't he like 8-9 with a –
I mean, I think it was DeGrom. You're right. I think it's DeGrom, where he has like eight wins, but his war was like a nine or something insane like that. Like, he has nine wins above replacement, but his team only. That's obviously all stuff that goes beyond the pitcher's control with wins and losses. But I really do think the value, if you have 50 more innings, is 50 more innings in which the team didn't have to go to, they didn't have to call someone up, or they're not burning out one of their bullpen arms because the starter that replaced you could only go four or five innings. Where Verlander normally goes about seven, you know, stuff like that. I really do think when numbers are close, you have to look at like what Sale, you said 6.7 WAR.
I thought it was like it's in the sixes. I don't know.
I think Verlander's six even.
Yes.
So when the WARs are that close, I kind of do look at, hey, 50 more innings, seven more starts.
And you know, but a six WAR and a 6.2 WAR are effectively the same thing.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with you there.
Like, they even say, like, don't freak out over, like, well, this guy's got a 5.4 WAR versus this guy's got a 5.5 WAR. That's the same fucking thing to them. It's a weird – I can't wrap my head around a thing. A 5 WAR and a 7 WAR are different. But when it gets into decimals, they don't – they consider you a 5 WAR player. You know what I mean?
That adds up. Yeah, that makes sense totally. What else do I want to talk about going into forward right now? Aaron Judge is back with the Yankees, so their offense is going to look really strong there. But it's going to be, you know, that one game could change everything. That's what makes the wild card game so damn sexy. I keep using the word sexy.
I don't like the Yankees.
You don't like the Yankees in a one game against the A's?
No.
You like Oakland?
I mean, who are the A's pitching?
I don't know yet. Edwin Jackson? Who knows? Trevor Cahill? Who's their A's?
Well, wasn't it Manea or whatever?
So I don't know who they're pitching.
And they got oh my god, I need to have this in front of me and stop walking around. They they got a pitcher from the Tigers whose name is fucking escaping me.
Did they get what's the name? Fulmer? No, not Fulmer. I know who you're talking about. That Tiger pitcher. What the hell's his name? Yeah, it's escaping me either, but you got to like the Yankees with their stud, Luis Cervino.
I like that. I just – at their best, the Yankees are going to score 50 runs. Do you know what I'm saying? Aaron Judge has like a 4.8 WAR. He's been hurt. I know he's impressive, but he hasn't been to me. Like, he's not Aaron Judge this year, even though I don't know what that means because he's only played one fucking season. Stanton, okay. He can hit a ball 600 feet. Okay. Didi is a little underappreciated, I think. He has like a 500 slugging.
Yeah, he's underrated.
Andujar. Pretty good slugging.
It's Sanchez, Bird, Glenbar Torres, who's probably a favorite to win Rookie of the Year in the American League, or Ohtani.
Yeah, I would say Ohtani by a mile, just because if you want to be fair about it, he pitched and hit. He has like a one WAR as a pitcher, so you can add that on. I honestly think you can add that on to his.
Well, I think so, too. Total. That was something we talked about in early April or maybe early or in May about Ohtani in that regard, where it's how do you not add them both together? That's your value.
I think you, because it is. I mean, are you the same person? So you're a one-win player and a three-win player, or are you the same guy? You're a four-win
player. So is he going to have Tommy John surgery?
I mean, people are recovering faster. I would guess that that's freaking the fuck out of them.
Because they said earlier this year they thought they were going to have it. And then he said, no, I think I could work through it. And then they've only hit him. I mean, he might make a start, they were saying. But why would they have him make one more start before the year's over with? It makes no sense.
Make him a closer.
Make him a closer. That's interesting, actually. Why not make him an everyday left fielder slash closer? Could you do both?
I don't know how he is as a fielder because he hasn't really done that. But
could you start a game as a DH and then move to the field?
I don't see why you wouldn't be able to.
I don't know if you can, though. I think there's a weird rule about that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great question. That's like some National League shit that I think that they don't even have to talk about in the American League.
It's not like when you start.
Because why would in the fuck would you have a pitcher hitting anywhere if in the American?
Well, I think about it this way too. If say you had David Ortiz as your DH, and then your first baseman got injured, in like the sixth inning, could you move David Ortiz from DH to first base?
I mean, yeah, if he's in the lineup, he's in the lineup.
I know
right?
that, but I've never seen that. I've never heard this.
I mean, I'd never seen a pitcher go out to left field and come back in.
That makes more sense, though, because you can't take the pitcher out and put him back in. Once you're out of the game, you're out of the game.
But the whole thing is for the batting order, right?
Yes.
The whole thing is for the batting order because technically, let's say that Mike Trout made the third out. Now you have the bottom of the ninth. And your next hitter is not Mike Trout. And then Mike Socha goes, Trout is switched with whoever is batting first. And then the umpire goes, you can't just do that. Like, I think that's why the rule exists.
Yeah, but I think it's more, obviously if you're playing in center field and batting first and you move to left field, you're still batting first. You're no longer where the left fielder was. But with the DH spot, so St. Mike Trout, got the last out of the previous inning that he was playing center field, but the DH spot's coming up in the order. You can't be like, I'm moving Mike Trout to DH and then moving this guy to center field. That's my question. Because if you have Ohtani starting games as the DH, how do you bring him into pitch? But it's the American League. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't. I don't think
you're
it matters.
You're right. It doesn't matter. I was thinking National League stuff.
I think you cross off DH and put in RP.
Yeah. It probably wouldn't matter because it doesn't mess up the batting order.
Right.
See, that's interesting. If I were the Angels, I would do it that way. Make him be a guy who could pitch a couple innings every 2 days or so, or as the closer. Yeah, why not? Because, as a bat, he looks like a guy who could hit about 25 home runs a year and get.
Or more. He could hit 30.
He could probably be
runs,
a 30 home run guy with a slash line of I don't know. I don't know how good is his eye. Is he a high on base percentage guy?
I mean, he was injured a
lot.
What's
really bad.
Right
when I asked, is he a high on base percentage guy? In my head, I said, well, most of the Japanese are.
Well, when you said how I don't think that none of the listeners thought of that.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm gonna put it on the listeners.
Good Lord. Okay. No, I definitely see him as a plus offensive player, though. So you almost want that bat in there every day. You think if the Yankees could do it all over again back in the 20s, they would have made Babe Ruth their closer? They didn't have closers back then, though. That's back when men were men. They finished what they started, and they beat their wives. You know what I mean?
They had enough problems with him.
That's not a good thing, everyone. Who with Babe Ruth?
Yeah.
Yeah. but... Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because this is like the first time we've ever had a guy like this since Babe Ruth.
I think back in the day, the Tom Emanski rules of fielding, hitting your cutoff runner and throwing direct base was not necessarily a thing. I think it was a lot sloppier back then. if you look at like all the errors that occurred in those games, like guys had shitty gloves made out of like a cow's head just on their hand, you know, and like I don't think Babe Ruth was considered like an excellent fielder to begin with. So I think he just went up there hungover and swung for the fences. And so you got that guy now pitching. I don't know.
How good would Babe Ruth have been if he had a nutritionist, didn't care, you know, and worked out every day? Actually, they said in his later part of his career, he started to exercise better because he had a couple seasons where he thought he could have been better. At least that's what you see in that Babe movie with John Goodman, where it's like, oh, look, the Babe has slimmed down that gut. And it's like, oh, cool. Now John Goodman only weighs 70 pounds more than what the actual living Babe Ruth would have weighed.
I still, that was such bad casting.
That was terrible casting and not a very good movie. And it could have been a great movie. There should be another Babe Ruth movie. I mean, if we're bringing back Will and Grace and Full House and Magnum P.I. and Murphy Brown, we need to bring back
Roseanne.
Yeah, the Connors. We need to bring back a true Babe Ruth movie. Someone redo the script, make it a little bit better, and let's cast a true Babe Ruth. Who would we cast right now as Babe Ruth?
Liev Schreiber.
Yeah, that'd be a pretty good one. He needs to...
Maybe he's old.
You got to find someone who could be... Look, here's the deal with Babe Ruth, everyone, because people see pictures going, yeah, he looked a little chubby. He was a little husky. He was 6'2", 225 pounds. He had skin from the waist down, like legs-wise, he had like my legs. He had the legs of a 185-pound man. But from the waist up, he had the torso of a 250-pound man. You put that together, you get about a 225, 230-pound guy. I don't know who would fit that.
I think a lot of people also picture Babe Ruth when he gave his goodbye speech at Yankee Stadium. It was, for a time, just almost as famous as Lou Gehrig's. Obviously not, hasn't had the staying power. But he's standing, facing left field, using a bat to hold him up. And he put on the uniform. He's past his prime. He's dying. And it's like one of the most famous pictures ever taken, especially at the time. And he was a fatso.
Yeah.
And that's not Babe Ruth looking straight at the camera in a Red Sox uniform with a small waist and broad shoulders looking like he has, like, the most insane swinging torque anyone has ever seen.
The Sultan of SWAT. Yeah, if you look at his swing, obviously there's some swings where early in the career, he almost took like a step like Happy Gilmore. Like he took a step and did the swing. But that swing was this great launch angle swing that all the hitting coaches are preaching nowadays from a lefty, where it's almost like he like clubs it. You know what I mean? He almost looks like a caveman where he gets that whip, that and just kind of like smashes.
They've shown like a split screen of his swing next to Bryce Harper's, and they're basically identical when he was locked in. Yeah, he did take those steps when some motherfucker's throwing like an ephus. You know, they weren't throwing. I would guess that they were throwing like in the 70s.
Probably. But which to me, in a way, almost makes it still pretty incredible that he was hitting 500-foot home runs off 75-mile-an-hour pitches, because as you know, it's easier to hit pitches in the 90s farther than it is in the 70s.
Right. If he played today, like, he couldn't have had those bats. He had, like, monster bats.
God, he's throwing, like, a 53-ounce bat or something insane.
Yeah, I think...
I don't like more than a 33-ounce bat. It's 20 more ounces. That's crazy.
No, yeah, his bat's, like... You go to the Hall of Fame, they have some of his bats, and you're like, no fucking way.
I remember hearing someone talk about the way he was built, which doesn't make sense so much for defensive purposes, but the way he was built as a hitter and the way where his strengths were almost like he was built to be a baseball player. Do you remember in the Olympics for 2008, they had a breakdown of Michael Phelps's body? And
His
body was almost like he was made in a lab to be the greatest swimmer of all time. He's 6 foot four, but I mean, there's taller swimmers, but the way his body, he's tall from the waist up. He has this long torso, which is actually helps you more as a swimmer. Now his legs were 6'4", so still his long legs, but his torso is much longer, but his size 15 shoes, which are freakishly big, act as flippers. And they say his hands are also abnormally big for a man his size, which helps when you're cupping the water and pushing it out when you're doing the strokes. So they say everything about the dude. And then even his dong in the water drags not enough where it holds him back. I'm making that part up, actually.
and what's with the no penis on him.
So real, just real smooth.
Real sleek.
But yeah, so Babe Ruth kind of the same way where it's, you know, I said he had a small waist for a guy that was big, which almost makes the torque in your hips. Because people forget a lot of a baseball player's swing is the hips.
I mean, Giancarlo Stanton has tiny, tiny waist.
Ken Griffey Jr. was a guy that was so much hips in his swing. People look at that swing and think of like how cool his finish was. But that swing was all hips. It's him throwing the hips out, and then the rest of the bat comes with it. And that's why it looks as pretty as it does.
Yeah. I still think he has the greatest swing.
Ken Griffey Jr.?
Seen.
I 100% yeah. agree. That is, bar none, the greatest swing you'll ever see. It's just too cool. That guy was... Someone was talking about it today. They go, is Javi Baez getting to the point where he's transcending baseball in the sense where if baseball was smarter, they would get him to that level. Meaning, it's not too often in baseball someone's so famous that non-baseball fans know who they are. You know what I mean? Like, everyone knows who LeBron is. Everyone knew who Tom Brady is. Obviously, Ken Griffey Jr. is one of those guys where even if you didn't know shit about baseball, you knew who Ken Griffey Jr. was. But who in baseball today is the guy where the average person on the street, if you say, do you know who this person is? They'll say yes. Because I guarantee if I go downtown, you go downtown LA, go downtown Chicago, and every person that walks by, anyone, no matter what walk of life, you just say, do you know who LeBron James is? They'll say, yeah, basketball player. Who do you know Tom Brady is? Yeah, football player. I don't know if there's a...
You're going to hate my answer.
Who is it?
Pujols.
I don't hate it because you're right. Pujols is probably the guy, but he's a year or two from retirement. They need another guy to take that spot. I complained about it two podcasts ago, I think, or maybe last podcast, where on my MLB app, I get a commercial before seeing the highlight, and it's an Albert Pujols selling someone stuff in a Home Depot type situation. I'm like, you're still putting Albert Pujols in commercials, but you can't put his teammate Mike Trout, Mickey Mantle in a commercial? Come on.
But
that's also sad about baseball because there was a time in which several players were household names.
I would guess Clayton Kershaw is going to be known by a majority of people.
I don't even know about that, man. I would want to believe that. I mean, he might be. He's probably the closest right now. Bryce Harper might be getting there because he's actually in a lot of commercials.
He's in a lot of stuff.
Real quick, Bryce Harper, has your opinion changed about the Cubs signing him? The Phillies are a big rumor. The Phillies, there's one rumor that said the Phillies will try to sign him and Machado because they just got a new TV deal.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw that.
I don't want that to happen. I don't like that. I hate it when it happens in other sports. I don't want it to happen in baseball.
Do I want Bryce Harper launching balls onto Sheffield?
Of course.
Yes.
But say you can only sign one, him or Machado. Who do you sign?
Manny Machado.
I did too because I look at the Cubs configuration, and this is assuming the NL doesn't get the DH, which, dude, if we're putting money on it, we are a year or two away from that happening. I'm telling you, I feel it in the waters. The DH is coming to the NL. I don't know if it'll be in 2019 or 2020, but that some bitch is on the horizon.
I haven't even seen that rumored. I've seen people wanting it.
But... I've seen enough hints and whispers at it where I feel like it's coming out. And Manfred was in an interview about a few months ago saying that's something that the players' union's going to have to bring up to us. You know, I don't rule out anything that I'm for whatever helps baseball. That's what he said, which makes me think he'll be cool.
Well, it makes sense in a don't get your pitchers hurt on the base paths. Your pitchers make $1 billion a year. Maybe don't have them running out there like goofballs with their jackets on.
Yes, that's a big part of it. And also this whole new realigning the divisions thing they might be doing is another thing that's going to maybe make it where it's like, all right, maybe a universal DH is a smart play. Because, you know, they're talking about expansion again. And through that, they're talking about doing four divisions a league where it's four team divisions, kind of like how the NFL has it, where there's like a and, you know, National League North and a National League South and, get rid of the Central, but there'll be like an East, West, North, South type thing. That'd be interesting to see how that plays out. But assuming the DH doesn't come to the NL, because then if the DH came to the NL, I look at my Cubs specifically, but other teams, the Brewers, for a good example, would love to DH Ryan Braun. Guaranteed they would. And of course, they were with a few other teams too. So the Cubs would DH Schwarber. And then immediately I think, okay, cool. Bryce Harper in left. And then you have Elmore in center and Hayward in right. Because look, Hayward's not opting out. Hayward is going to be a Cub throughout those 8 years. Because I don't see a situation, even if he has an all-star year next year, because he has an opt-out after this year and an opt-out after next year. I don't see a situation in which he chooses that opt-out, because I don't see him making more money on the market than he would already as a Cub. So Hayward's there. And if there's no DH, what do you do? Hayward in right, Elmora in center? Or do you go Hayward center, Harper right, Schwarber left, and then trade Elmora? But then your defense is a little shaky then. I don't know. It's one of those things. But the way I see it with the Cubs, you have Hayward in right, Elmora in center, Schwarber in left. You have Zobrist as your guy that kind of plays all around. And then you have you sign Machado, because we all know I think the Addison Russell days are over, because I think even the team has kind of soured on him. I was looking at his numbers, dude. What do you think his OPS is in the second half for Addison Russell?
Oh, he's god awful.
It's a 454 is his OPS.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, he is abysmal these last 3 months of the season. He had a good month of like June, second half of May, and then since July 1st has just been not a major league player, besides defensively.
Yeah, he's still good for a silly diving like stab at short.
Yeah, no, he's great there, which almost makes me think maybe you keep him around as a backup shortstop. But doesn't he have more value on the trade market in a sense that someone will be like, look, I don't think you're going to get much for him, but I think you could get a situation where someone's like, hey, we'll trade you these three mid-level prospects. The one we think needs a change of scenery, like you think Addison Russell needs a change of scenery, and let's do it that way.
I think that he could get a lot if you think about it. Like, great defensive shortstop, high upside on age, and maybe you have like a batting coach be like, I can tinker with him. Plus,
he'll have 3 years of control.
Plus playoff experience.
You're right. 3 years of control, playoff experience. I think his playoff numbers are actually pretty good overall. You're right. Gold Glove defense, young, 3 years of control, playoff experience. Those are four pros. So yeah, you're right. Theo and Jed could probably sell him on some team. I just think, you know, before this year, you probably could have gotten someone really good for him. Now I think you kind of have to do, I don't think you're going to, you know, he's not enough. You have to package him with some other people if you really want to try to bring back a stud.
Oh, he's also a head case.
He's got the off the field stuff. He seems to love getting women pregnant. You know,
he's Tracy Morgan.
He pulls off the ball. He doesn't pull out. It's the whole thing. Yeah, he's Tracy Morgan. Anyway, though, yeah, the Indians are interesting, though. I wanted to switch back to the playoff talk real quick and wrap it up, because I realize, you know, we get a little too Cubs heavy. But, you know, if I'm picking Machado or Harper, I'm leaning Machado right now. Obviously, you don't complain for either of them. Hey, to our White Sox friends out there, what a major blow about Kopech, huh? You hear about that? Did we talk about that?
Yeah, but I mean,
because
I don't know. I want to talk about playoff teams. Burn City, Dylan.
Burn City. Yeah, well, you know, you're right. We should be focusing on the playoff teams. Cleveland is set up nicely. They've already clinched, but, you know, are they going to get bored? Their pitching staff is great. You can make a case for a couple of their guys for Cy Young. And MVP, they got Jose Ramirez and Lindor. So everyone's talking about Boston. And then Houston, because they're the reigning champs.
Listen, they're going to play Houston in the first round. More than likely. Yeah. I don't want to hear shit about the Astros until you can explain to me how Alex Bregman, Jose Altuve, and not much else, honestly, is going to get past their core four motherfucker pitchers.
The American League side of things are damn exciting, man, because they, like, as a Cubs fan, look, I've got the faith. I believe we're the best team in the National League. I know we're the best team in the National League, even with all the ups and downs the Cubs have had, and damn it, they have. And that's why, really, I mean, we've you and I run a text that we'll question a lot of things Madden does, but overall, he's done a very good job, and I think a strong case for Manager of the Year. I just, with the American League, though, man, it's a good thing as a National League fan, we don't have to worry about them until the World Series. And at that point, you're just happy you're in the World Series because, and anything could happen, obviously. But that, on paper, the Red Sox is very scary. Indians, I think it might be, you can make a case that Cleveland's the scariest. And then Houston, still very respectable. And then the Yankees feel like they could slug the shit out of you. And Oakland, obviously, is that team that you're like, I don't see them winning in the playoffs.
Are you gonna love pitching to Chris Davis?
No, of course not. And then they have what's his name too, Chapman, who's awesome, the hitter, not the pitcher.
Jed Lowry,
good ball player. No, Oakland, dude, they do a lot right. I just wish maybe there's something about the AL West just not getting enough love because their games come on too late.
The AL West never gets enough love because of that. Like when the Cubs play the Diamondbacks. Like, they're going to play, like, most Cubs fans are asleep.
Dude, I didn't watch the last inning. I was exhausted. I didn't. I said to myself, I'm like, my phone will alert me when the game's over. It's 9-1. I'm going to call it. Cause it was like, you know, 11:45 over here.
So. I mean, that's just how it is in the Midwest. Like, I remember I couldn't believe how late the Pac-10 games were, I guess Pac-12. Like football games, like it was just like, are you kidding me? You know, like games are on like 1 a.m. and you're trying to be, you can't believe the Dodgers are still playing. You know what I mean?
Well, see, if I'm Major League Baseball, I try to give them more of the primetime games then. I try to give them more of the Fox Saturday game of the week. You know, say if it's a 3 o'clock game in the Midwest, then, you know, 1 o'clock game in LA is not a big deal for fans. I understand you can't obviously say, hey, people on the West Coast, we need your games to start at 4 o'clock just so they're on at 7 in Chicago and 8 o'clock in New York, because that's going to suck for people who live there, because it's like 4 o'clock, motherfucker, I got to work at 5. That sucks. You know, it's going to hurt ticket sales and everything. I get that. But the Saturday and Sunday night ESPN baseball, you could start that game at 4 o'clock. I think people who lived in LA would be like, cool, 4 o'clock Sunday game, I'm cool with that. Might be some weird shadows going, but that sounds fine. And a 1 o'clock game on a Saturday that starts at 3 o'clock in Chicago and 4 o'clock in New York. That's a good way to look at it too.
Also, I just because of the history of the country, I think that West Coast teams have no history unless they moved across the country. And so people might look at the Padres a certain way, like, and be like, eh, it's not a real team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's true. There's probably some lingering stuff with that. Cause you know, as baseball has a very old fan base and everything. So, but it still is a young fan base. I hate it. They did a thing where they did the averages of every fan base in baseball was the highest age at, like, the average baseball fan's age is like 55. But I go, that's kind of skewing the numbers though, because I don't think there's any 94-year-olds who are like watching the NBA. You know what I mean? Not because they're for whatever reason, but because when they were in their 20s and 30s, the NBA wasn't a thing.
No, the NBA really wasn't a thing.
Dr. J, Bird, Magic, when they merged with the ABA. So we're talking about late 70s, the NBA became a thing.
Yeah, no one gave a shit about the NBA till the 80s.
Do you know what? And even the NFL for a while there was like the 60s. So, yeah, there's going to be old guys who their only sport they like is baseball, and they probably watch golf. I read a thing where the second most popular sport in 1960 was boxing. It was baseball, then boxing.
Right, then probably horse racing.
Yeah, and then I think football might have been fourth, and then hockey, and then basketball. Hockey and basketball were considered club sports, like at like the Division I level for a while. Football was obviously very popular college wise, and then basketball, the tournament got big, you know. So obviously that helped it. But so that's why I think it's kind of bullshit when they say the average age of a baseball fan is 55. See, it's a bunch of old people watching baseball. I go, yes, but there's also young people. It's an average age. You know what I mean? If I've got a 10-year-old and a 40-year-old watching something, it's going to make the average age 20. Like, so, like, I don't know. It was annoying. I was trying to be like, look, there's 90-year-olds that watch it, so that skews up the thing. That fucks up our number. I was just trying to stick up for baseball, you know, because I love it, damn it.
Yeah, I agree with you. But it makes sense to me that old people watch baseball. I mean, I think young people watch baseball too, but I think that more old people watch baseball.
I think so too, because from the old people love rules, and baseball has a lot of them, and basketball doesn't enforce them, and football changes their rules. Literally every 2 years, football changes rules. So whenever, that's what annoys me about baseball to an extent, because baseball has always feared change. Maybe this new commissioner Manfred will be better than Selig was, because Selig I thought was terrible about change. Although there was some stuff that happened, but
Hall of Famer Bud Selig,
right? But no, seriously, whenever, like, baseball, hey, we got to limit the mound visits. What the fuck? I can't go out there 45 times. This is bullshit. Quit trying to change the game. And I go, you know what? I agree with that. Let's slow down the mound visits. Let's look. You know, obviously, I love the game the way it is, and you love the game the way it is, but we both can admit there's a couple things here or there that could probably improve the game without really changing the core of it. I don't want to do what football does, where every week they change something.
I mean, I want to murder everybody around me as soon as Pedro Baez gets on the mound. God,
he is the worst. You were at that game with me, right, when I was screaming at him?
No, I think you were with Brendan, but I've commented on it. I think we both found out that we both
I think
hated
I was next
him.
To Josh Chaney. And I was screaming, you are ruining baseball. Everyone is changing the channel right now. It was like I thought I was with you because we were in those seats you like so much. Those center field seats right behind home plate in the upper deck. I think you were at the game, but we weren't sitting in the same area. But we met up. It doesn't matter. But yeah, he's the worst. That guy takes an hour. And it's, I've heard pitching coaches say, we've tried to make him go faster, because the one time he actually went fast and had a great inning, and I don't know why he doesn't go faster. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, get out of your own head sometimes. But football, my God, they change. I see every season there's a new rule. So old people love in baseball because the rules stay the same. Basketball, I could see an old guy watching it and take race out of it. It could be an old black man who's 87 going, what is this? That's called ups and downs, damn it. In my day, if you did that, it was a penalty, you know? Traveling, they don't call traveling in the NBA anymore. So if you're someone who grew up on rules and you're watching today's game, you're going to be like, this sucks. I'm not into this. Give me the game in which I could have a hot dog and still understand what's going on, essentially.
Yeah, I think baseball is a little bit more mature of a sport.
Yes, I would agree.
I mean, it's not all, like, highlights and bullshit. There's nuances to it that you have to, a casual fan of baseball doesn't even really understand the rules. I've seen it happen. I've played like pickup games of baseball, like whatever, for intramurals, and people don't know the rules of baseball. Like when you have to tag, when there's a force out, people don't understand that shit.
Yeah, the force out one, like, is the most embarrassing to me. I've seen people be like, oh, he didn't tag him. I go, no, he doesn't have to tag him.
Yeah. So I think maybe people get frustrated with that. Like, imagine if a guy ran a touchdown and it's like, no, when the ball's on the 5-yard line, he has to do a somersault into the end zone. And it'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, that'd be pretty bizarre. All right, let's wrap up the podcast with some predictions real quick. NL West, who do you like?
Well, obviously, I think that if I had to bet, I would say the Dodgers will win that. I am not even sure I want the Rockies to be in the postseason. And I say that because it's like they play on another planet in Denver.
Someone tried to compare, like, Trevor Story to Javier Baez. And if you look at Trevor Story's road numbers, you know he's a Coors Field product.
If you look at his stats, you have to look at his, like, any stat that has a plus next to it, where they take your stadium into account. He and Arenado both drop off, like, the leaderboards if you go to weighted runs created plus, because they play at fucking Coors Field. It's like that planet and Interstellar that ages you, like. That is just not a normal place.
That's a nice little spoiler alert on Interstellar, Dick. I haven't seen that one yet, so thanks.
That's not a spoiler.
It feels like it's a spoiler. I'm just joking, by the way. Yeah, you know what? I don't know. Something about Coors. I feel bad for Rocky fans in that sense because they're like, hey, we can't help it. This is where our civilization is, okay?
Right.
We're pie, dickheads, you know what I mean? Don't punish us for that. I get it. And Arenado, look, I think he's a wonderful ball player, but he's a little overrated. And defensively, he's a stud. That defense plays in any ballpark, clearly. But yeah, I just remember DJ LeMahieu. Everyone's like, DJ LeMahieu. And I'm like, look, outside of Coors Field, he's Darwin Barney. Come on. He's a nice second baseman, but don't get this twisted. So anyhow, with the NL Central, how do you see it playing?
Cubs are going to win the division.
What date? You want to pick a date? How many games left will they win it?
Their magic number is 8. They're playing the White Sox next.
They're off tomorrow. First day off in 30 days, which is insane. Nice job, Major League Baseball. Way to try to hurt one of your most popular franchises in a playoff run, too, by the way. And then they play 3 on the South side. Then I believe 4 at home against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then 3 against St. Louis. Yep.
That fucks St. Louis a little bit. Cardinals have a horrible schedule.
Yeah, it came pretty rough toward the end for the St. Louis Cardinals.
I want to see the wild card game between the Brewers and Cardinals.
I want to see that too. It'd be fun because whoever we play, it's like we know them, we know their guys. Like that's exciting. I know the Brewers have won 4 of their last 6 against us, but we won the season series overall. We also shut them out about 7 times. So yeah, I'm not afraid of either team. Bring them both on as a Cub fan. I'm getting a little cocky with you, and why not? And look, Milwaukee, you should be very proud of your season. You didn't fold like you did last year in September. You stepped it up. The Yelich acquisition, I can't talk, has been fantastic. So with Lorenzo Cain, I mean, their executive should probably get an award because I feel like he did a really good job in the offseason. Where as much as we love Theo and Jed, the Cubs brass, but, you know, Chatwood was a bad signing, and Darvish is not looking good. Where the Cubs brass made up for it, though, was trading literally nothing, basically. I mean, not literally nothing, but basically nothing to acquire Cole Hamels, Daniel Murphy, Jesse Chavez, who's been fantastic in the bullpen. Those 3 pickups have all been huge, and we gave up not much at all, you know?
Hey, just think if we had you, Darvish, and Brandon Morrow and didn't have to play 30 games in a row, we might even have the best record in the fucking National League.
Oh, wait. We do have the best record in the National
League.
Thank you. We might have the best record in the Major Leagues if we had Yu Darvish being what we thought he would be and Brandon Morrow around. Yeah, and so many injuries the Cubs had. People haven't talked about this. Kyle Schwarber's missed almost the last 10 games.
And Chris Bryant?
Chris Bryant, who's an MVP, has missed months of the season. I mean, he just hit his 12th home run. Like, it's crazy how many things the Cubs have overcome. That's why I think Joe Maddon has to be manager of the year when you put all that together.
I will say this, though. Zobrist has like a .314 batting average. I don't think anyone on the Cubs has hit .300 since like Starlin Castro 100 years ago.
Yeah, damn. It's been a long time. They said it'd be the first time someone took top 5 since Derek Lee won the batting title.
That was in 2005. Years ago.
Also, Baez, if he leads the league in RBI, it'll be the first time since Sammy Sosa did in 2001.
Yeah, don't look up Sosa's 2001 numbers if you don't want to be confused for the rest of the day.
I'll be confused, but I remember how many RBI he had in 2001.
Oh, it was.
And I know as sabermetrics guys, we're not the biggest RBI dudes, but you know, it's still
what was it?
He had 160 RBI in 2001. 160. And you know how many games he played? 160. So it means he averaged an RBI a game. He also had 147 runs scored.
Just so everybody's wondering, I consider 100 to be a lot.
Yes. Look, the RBI is still an important stat because it's runs, and runs are win games. But we just – it's not something that you could put – it's a stat that's a team stat, really, because it's, you know, it relies on other people getting on base and all that kind of shit.
Yes.
I look at assists in basketball the same way. I remember Derrick Rose in his like rookie season only had like 7 assists or 6 assists a game. And someone's like, he's got to get those assist numbers up. And I'm like, well, the Bulls had one of the worst field goal percentages as a team. So he's making passes. They're just not making them in. So some people will see assists and go, oh, this guy's not a good passer. He only averaged 4 or 5 assists. I'm like, no, he's a great passer. They're just not scoring when he makes the passes. That's not, you know, I mean, that's, you need the guy to make the basket in order for it to be an assist. So it's kind of a team effort there. They're cumulative counting stats in that sense. And that's how I look at RBI and runs scored. Yes, scoring a run is very important, but someone has to drive you in. So when I see a guy who's let a run score, I don't automatically think this guy's amazing. The guy's usually pretty good because he means they're getting on base. But with RBI as a stat of just driving someone in, you could have a bad season and have a ton of RBIs. If you have, I used Joe Carter as an example once. Joe Carter batted third or fourth for the Blue Jays when they had Roberto Alomar with a 400 on base percentage and John Olerud in front of him with almost a 400 on base percentage. So it's like, all right, the dude hit, you know, 220 with runners in scoring position, but he drove in 110 runs because people were living on base in front of him.
You know what's weird is Charlie Blackman not having an amazing season, not an amazing on base percentage, but it leads the National League in runs scored.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, but you know, again, some of it could be maybe he's a good base runner, goes first to third well. So some of it could be him doing that. It's amazing because there's so many arguments on Twitter that I read earlier today about Yelich versus Baez, and a lot of the Yelich people. I did give a good point because they're like, oh, Baez has 2 more stolen bases, but he's gotten thrown out 5 or 6 more times. So really, Yelich is even the better base stealer. And I go, first of all, there's more to base running than just base stealing because Baez will have it where he's stealing second and there's an error and they don't throw a call as a stolen base because it's an error. But really, it's the way he was running that forced the error, which we've talked about in this podcast. Also, those 2 more stolen bases are Baez stealing home because Baez has stolen home fucking twice. How do you put that into value? That's literally stealing runs. Twice his stolen bases are stolen runs. So, yeah, he's been thrown out a few more times, but the risk-to-reward ratio, I think, is better for Baez when you could actually say, oh, those stolen bases 100% led to runs. Because stolen bases don't always lead to runs.
No.
You steal second and yeah, then be stranded on second. When you steal home, you're not stranded on any bases, is my point.
There's so much more to base running than stealing bases. I just look at Yelich, leads the league in war.
Look, I like Yelich. He's an amazing player, and I wish he, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm like, damn, I wish we had him. And if he does win the MVP, I wouldn't be upset about that because he's had a great season. I think Baez has done more that doesn't translate into the stat sheet, though.
I agree with you. I just, you know, keeping you honest once again.
No, I appreciate that, man. Yeah, I'm not going to be some Cubs homer here. I'm not going to show my Baez. My bias, like bias. You guys get what I did there? All right. But I just, you know.
Javier bias.
Yeah, man. I have a strong Javier bias. And I think I made a good point, too. I didn't realize this. I thought Yelich bats in front of Kane these days. Kane hits third. Yelich is batting second. So that's not, I mean.
Where
you know,
who's Segura in that? Not Segura. Aguilar.
Yeah, I mean, he's a dude. The Milwaukee has got some seasons from a few guys where I'm like, damn, I didn't realize how good that player was until I looked at their numbers a couple weeks ago. No, the Brewers are a tough team, and I don't think they're going to be if the Cubs Brewers that in that NLDS. That's going to be a hell of a series. I like the Cubs in 4, but that's going to be a hell of a series.
Do they have pitching?
They don't have any pitching that scares me. They don't. I mean, and the Cubs offense, though, is it's a tale of two teams. They're Jekyll and Hyde. They're either going to score 8 or 9 runs or 0, you know?
Who's the best pitcher in the National League playoffs?
Well, Kershaw, if they make it. But is he, like, the best playoff pitcher? Who knows?
Yeah, is he?
I think Cole Hamels. I think Cole Hamels or Lester, you can make a case. Okay. Or Hendricks. Dude, Hendricks has been pitching like an ace since July 1st. If you look at his last 10 starts, Hendricks has been ace level, man.
So
his strikeouts to walk ratio has jumped up big time too.
Foltynewicz for the Braves. I don't see the Braves doing that well, but that's I could be wrong.
So it could be Braves Dodgers first round. I think we could see Cubs Dodgers for the third consecutive.
I would love
year.
It. I know that you hate it, but I would love it.
No, I would love it. As long as we win.
The Brewers
like
have Gio Gonzalez now, and I guess how do you say?
Oh yeah, forgot about him. But he's He's pretty average. We went pretty long with part two of this two-part podcast, so I think we got to wrap it up.
All right.
Because we got to save some stuff to talk about for these next 2 weeks. Also, dude, off-air, me and you should figure out what we want to do special for the playoffs. We want to do another podcast week. Do we want to go like live on Facebook? We should do something fun. I don't know, write a blog. I feel like we should start a Comedians Talking Baseball.com or some comedy baseball fusion. We got to figure this out, man, because I think we there's so much more we could be doing. Look, we've got a nice solid listener base, but I always think that we should be bigger than we are because I think we do baseball talk in a way that nobody else does. And this when we stay focused, we are both funny and informative, and you're not getting that from anywhere else, everybody.
This podcast told you the Red Sox were winning the division.
You called that shit, man. I think you called that more than I did. So anyway, though, but thanks to all of our listeners. Keep telling your friends about it. We will, you know where to find us on Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. Listen to our albums on, buy them. They're on iTunes. Anyhow, though, that's for Mike Bryanson. I'm Joe Kilgallen. This has been Comedians Talking Baseball.